fishing around here?
Well, the valley has been known to, it isn't, it's been very dry for three summers now, so Dry Brook is really living up to its name. It hasn't really gone dry, but the fishing isn't.
I think you can put it down a little bit. You can watch that, so there's just a little bit of flash there. Mrs. Haynes, this group has been studying about the age of homespun, and we were at Kingston at the museum, we were at Old Hurley, we were at the at Cooperstown yesterday at the Farmers Museum, and one of the reasons we wanted to come here was not that the people here live in the age of homespun. As a matter of fact, I slept under my first electric blanket last night, but that people, that the past is still so close in the to us, that the people in a valley like this, the change from the old to the new occurred so recently, and I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about what the valley was like, when you were young here, we saw a one-room school yesterday, and just what the school was like in Dry Brook when you were young.
Well, the Little Red Schoolhouse where I went to school is just about an eighth of a mile up the road. And when centralization came in 1936, almost all the little schoolhouses were sold for summer cottages, and that was the case with this one up here, and is the case with the one down where you turn to go up Rider Hollow. And this was always a small school, I suppose never more than 15 or 18 children. And we were all in the same room, always. Sometimes there were only seven in the school year, and then sometimes there were 15. And I had my first examination in anything in June of 1907. Up to that time, the school had never been graded and no examination had ever been given, and I had to go to Margaretville to take high school entrance examinations. But after that, they graded the school and had grade examinations. But before that, when we got ready, we had a big arithmetic and a big geography and a big history book, and that's the way it was in the early 1900s.
Did you take your lunch, carry your lunch to school?
Yes. Because it was quite a long walk.
Uh-huh. Mrs. Haynes, I think we'd all be interested to know, did the fact that there were no grades make a difference in the way youngsters perform, or make a difference when they finally got to high school?
Well, I was the second person in the valley to go to high school. And when I went down, if you're thinking of standards, when I went down, I passed all the examinations except arithmetic. And the teacher lived in the valley, and he trained me for August, and I passed it in August and went into high school in the fall. And this particular teacher was the first person from the valley who had ever actually graduated from high school. And I was the first person, and that teacher's sister was the second person ever to go out of the valley to college. Mm. But I think that the people that have gone out since then have done very well as far as they've gone, but a great many have never even finished high school.
Do you remember what it was like going from a little one-room school to a Margaretville High School? Was it a hard change to make?
Well, it was rather of an adjustment. I had to stay in town and board with the families.
Why was that?
Well, because there was no transportation, you see.
How long would it take to go to, from here to Margaretville by horse and buggy?
Oh, I suppose 3/4 of an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And in the winter, of course, when the roads were bad, I often didn't get home for the weekend. My father, at the time, was superintendent of the George J. Gould estate up here. And so I was more fortunate than others in that there was a horse and wagon or a team available to come to town and bring me home Friday nights and go back on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the language required an adjustment, because even though I had passed my entrance examination in English, I still said, I ain't got no. and I seen it and I done it. And I ate out of the wrong side of my soup spoon and things like that. And then the matter of dress was important. I was a little stout and my mother dressed me in a sailor suit of the day, but the other girls didn't have sailor suits. So, because it had been the style some years before. But those things changed with the years, of course.
Well, the reason I ask that is that I also went from a small one-room country school to a high school in a little village, and I remember the experience very bitterly, because the boys really made life miserable for us country boys.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's going from just a small village, or from the country to a small village, the change was such that I felt very insecure, and the country and the village boys felt very superior.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one thing that helped me a great deal, or made it easier for me, was that the family with whom I went to board had formerly lived in Dry Brook, so I was acquainted with them. And there was a daughter in the family that was about 5 years older than I, and she sort of guided me and adjusted me, helped me get adjusted to village life.
Well, the first school teachers were men, weren't they, in the early days here?
That was not my experience.
Uh-huh.
I think they were in the...
Way back.
Yeah. I had 3 or 4 women teachers and only one man teacher before this one who came back from high school and inspired me to work a little and try to go away to school.
Did the teacher board around?
Not within my memory,
uh-huh.
But within the memory of people a little older than I, the teacher did board around. But by that time, the boarding was, some family took the teacher for a whole
mm-hmm.
year.
Then to get on to some other aspects, would you tell something about the early industry, the lumbering and so on in the valley?
The lumbering around here was of course a very, especially in the early days, was a major industry for building the houses and everything in the valley. I don't know that there was a great deal of shipment out. But the acid factory came about 1900 and stripped the hills very badly. That's why you see so much second growth everywhere around here. And then there was the,
Was there a tannery here?
Yes.
Before that?
There was a tannery in Arkville. I'm not sure that there was one in Dry Brook.
Mm-hmm.
But, that is where they took the wood for the acid, what they call the acid factory. But I think farming was perhaps for this particular location more important. But over the mountain, in many places, there were wood. There were factories where they made chairs and handles and things like that. But right in the valley, there wasn't such a development, so far as I know.
Would you tell us about the history of this particular house we're sitting in?
Well, this particular building is about 80 years old at the present time. And this room, and going back there, and upstairs where you will go if you have time.
Yes, we
have. Was the old general store. And it belonged to my husband's uncle. And if you've heard the record, of course, Mr. Studer's records about Mike, and this is the general store to which he refers.
Remember I said that Mike learned storytelling and how the men used to sit out in front of the store and tell stories. Well, this was where the store was.
And this downstairs was the store, and upstairs, until 1941, it was the town hall. And in 50, 60, 70 years ago, the medicine shows that came through and the square dances that were held, that was the place where they were held upstairs. It's not very big, but evidently it did serve its purpose very well.
Were square dances held in your time up there? Or
yes, yes.
So you remember events like that?
Yes, I can remember them very well. I do not remember seeing a medicine show, but my husband does. And
you people know what a medicine show was?
No, yes.
Where people would go around, they would first entertain and then they would sell medicine.
Oh.
Like on television. Commercials.
Yes. And then it was in 1957, after my husband decided he and Mrs. Haynes were getting along in years, and they sold this property across the way, or decided to make an apartment here and then sell the property across the way, so that this is an old door, and there are some old window frames, and the kitchen door is the original door, but in general, this is this apartment dates from just 1957. And
we're going up to the covered bridge and the old forge. Would you tell them the story about that forge?
Well, there are two or three stories about it. The earliest one is not really very authentic, but the one that is true is that a company was formed in the late 1800s to develop an iron works there, an old forge, an iron foundry it was called, and the company advertised that it would be a great place and it would be a great development, but really there wasn't much iron around here, and basically it was to get people to come here and settle. Well, a lot of people did come and settle, I guess, at that time, but the project didn't last very long because, in the first place, there was very little iron, and by the time the ore got carried in and then manufactured into cutlasses or whatever they wanted to make and got carried out again, it made it too expensive. But you will see up there the how easily an old forge could have been put there. And there, until very recently, there were signs of the foundations of the foundry, the building of the foundry, but I don't think you can detect them now.
Um, Is there any personal recollection you have about Mike Todd that you could give us of your knowing of him?
I can't contribute very much at that point because in 1907 I went away to high school, and in 1911 I went away to college, and I was away for 45 years. So that really there's nothing I can say about Mike that I'm sure hasn't already been told to you. But I think it's very wonderful that he had a chance to go to camp and mingle with young people and share his experience with them, because he had lived a rather lonely life. And it seems very fine that the end of his life should have been so happy and worthwhile.
Now, seventh grade, all through your years, you're going to be studying about history. And one of the things that I think is interesting is the opportunity to see how people gather information for history. Mrs. Haynes lives in this valley. She's written an article for the Catskill Mountain News about Dry Brook Valley, and I think it'd be interesting for her to tell us just how she gets it and how she gets this historical information and how history gets to be written.
Well, nothing of that sort had ever been written about Dry Brook. So the first thing I did was to go to Albany to the State Education Department and read and take notes on everything I could find about this particular section of Ulster County. Then I consulted two or three people who have been writing about other areas in this section and discovered certain old histories that I hadn't known about before. And then I just went from house to house where there were old people and gathered such tales as they could tell about their childhood and who had lived where and who came. My work, I was limited somewhat in space, so I limited that particular seven newspaper column article to the period up to 1900. Now, somebody ought to write from 1900 to 1950, while many people are still living who can talk about that period.
I think you should write about it. I'm sure that sometime there'll be a publisher who will want it.
Well, I suppose the Catskill Mountain News would write it at any time.
Yeah.
Mrs. Haynes, these youngsters will be doing considerable research, and I wonder if you could tell us, did it help you to think it out and order your notes and go back over it and so forth, just the general approach before you did the final writing?
Yes, I think I made about three drafts of the article. After I did my research in Albany, I had made up my mind how I would do it, that I would name the early settlers and add to what I got from books whatever I could get from talking to people back here. And then I decided to organize it under post offices and cemeteries and things of that sort for that older period. I didn't change the basic plan, but of course it had to. I really made three drafts before I sent it to the paper.
And I was interested in Mr. and Mrs. Haynes are gathering records of all the old, where all the old sawmills were located. And do you go and look and try to find those places?
My husband, who
Hello, Mr. Haynes.
How are you, sir? Who just came in, knew them by heart.
Oh, he knew that he didn't have to look them up.
He didn't have to look them up, but he has seen some of them recently. Mm-hmm. And knows offhand whether there are places, whether there's any remnant left of them. Now, I don't know how much time you have, but before you go upstairs, may I make a Or do you have a question?
No. There's only one thing that now that Mr. Haynes is here, there was one question that, or one thing that I would like to have. I would like to have somebody who knew Mike Todd just to tell a little bit about him. And Mr. Haynes did, I know. And if you could just tell a little bit about Mike for the group, like that story of, remember, the shooting when Mike grabbed your gun?
Well, I don't think I could tell you much about Mike if you haven't already heard.
But they haven't heard too much.
This particular instance, to show you how Mike was with guns and so on, was sitting on the rock. Please pull the horse here, high rocks over the creek. And we both had guns hunting kingfishers, which catch a lot of trout out of the stream. Guns laid between us, had a light in the sun. Up the creek comes a kingfisher. Well, while I'm reaching, trying to find my gun, Mike had it and shot the kingfisher before I could find the other gun to shoot at it. That's how good he was with the gun and hunting, don't you see? And then Mike was quite a character. Well, I know it.
Mrs. Lyman Todd told us about the time when he was annoyed by the visitors up at the tower, and he made this awful sound with this, what was the...
It was an animal
call. Yeah, an animal call, and everybody started running. It reminded me of the story you told of when he went out in the woods. And what was that again?
That was funny. That was over the heart of the mountains here. They had a beaver kill, and I was coming out of the woods of deer hunting past the Balsam Swamp. I got down to camp, and I says, I heard something up here in the swamp. I made a circle, and I couldn't see anything, but it made the awfulest noise I ever heard in the woods. Mike said, oh, that was me. The way you carry it.
Now you were going to say something about...
I was just going to... it would be easier to say something about upstairs now than when you get up there. It's just a collection of things that I have collected where I have been, and things that people have given me, and some old things that have come down in our families. Almost everything is labeled, so you can wander around and look at it. But when you go over in that corner, be very careful not to go, not to step on what you will see on the floor. John shot a wild turkey last Thursday, or Tuesday, and it weighed 17 pounds 3 ounces, and his granddaughter wanted the tail, so the tail has been salted and almond, and it's lying on the floor very flat, so be very careful not to touch it or touch the paper on which it lies, but you can look at it. And outside, John says there are a lot of feathers. If you want a wild turkey feather, you may hunt the place over after you get out.
Whereabouts is that?
Oh, out in the backyard somewhere. Where?
Just back in the fireplace here.
Now, would you just give a little background of where you were in South America so that they... I think the museum will mean a little more then.
Well, I was first a year in Korea, and... So there are some things over in that showcase that came from Korea and Japan, the showcase upstairs over in that corner. And then the Second World War was coming up and everybody was evacuated. And I was transferred to the seminary in Argentina. And there are things there from various countries in South America, because the students in the seminary came from 6 different Spanish-speaking countries. And for that reason, there are things from Argentina and Chile and Uruguay and Bolivia. And as you know, Mrs. Stockwell was there in the same seminary. And I think perhaps that will suffice to let you, give you some background for what you see there. I might call your attention to 2 things. Over on this wall behind the stove, you'll see some very heavy stirrups on the wall. You can take it down and look at it. And I picked them up in Colombia in 1946 when the cowboys were just discarding those heavy stirrups for the kind we use today. And there on this side are some snowshoes, part of the Americana that may be up there. They belong to my father, and John has had them in his possession or his family all these years, and so now we have them in the museum. And then there's an old shovel over on the farther side that was, you better say,
that was made locally. They made wooden shovels to handle vegetables so they wouldn't cut. They scooped out, made by hand, those wooden shovels. There's a number of small factories through this country that made scoops, they called them.
Well, I think with that, you'll have background.
Now, I'll tell you, I think that the best way, so that we are not jostling each other and so everybody can see better, is if half of us go and the people are sitting on the floor can go outside and just walk behind the house, see the brook, the dry brook itself, and maybe see if there are any wild turkey feathers there. And then when the others that are sitting on the chairs come down, these people can...
And these are for you to help yourself as you go by.
And George was sitting on chairs.